Sheffield Live. Made in Sheffield, made by you.
If you like rock in all its forms, you will love Glory Days. You can listen to us locally on 93.2 FM and on the telly, and anywhere in the world on sheffieldlive.org. What do you think, Dawn? You know what? I think he likes it. That's Glory Days, every Monday 1 till 3 here on Sheffield Live. Bosh, bosh. Oops, I've had an accident.
Hello, I'm Harry Wilburn. I present Steel & Wire every Wednesday, 10 a.m. Americana, bluegrass, American roots, and more. Lots more. Lots of guests, lots of local music and musicians. That's Steel & Wire, Wednesday, 10 a.m.
You're listening to fabulous Harry Wilburn on Steel & Wire.
It's time to open the music box. Join me, Steve Roden, every Thursday morning between 10 and 12 for music from the 40s to the 90s from my own music collection. Songs I've grown up with, ones I am sure you will enjoy hearing again. Hope to see you then.
If you love new music and you want to discover the best new artists out there, then tune into The Backroom with me, Paddy. I'll be playing the best of new indie, electro, EDM and punk and showcasing new Sheffield talent. Also music news, local and national gig guide and new album releases. So tune into The Backroom every Thursday night between 6 and 7 p.m. here on Sheffield Live, 93.2 FM.
This is Sheffield Live.
Hit the music. It's Saturday, it's just after 11, and you know what that means? It's time for the Live Science Radio Show.
Wow, what a totally amazing, excellent discovery.
It will test your head, and your mind, and your brain, too.
Come on, let's go, space trucker!
We are not worthy.
Dude.
We are not worthy. Good morning and welcome to the Live Science Radio Show here on Sheffield Live 93.2 FM on digital if you're in South Yorkshire or sheffieldlive.org. Talking about science in all its different forms. It's Saturday the 15th of June 2024 if you're listening on catch up. And you've got Julian Paul live in the studio.
Yes.
Hot from Soul Plus, which is the programme before. We've got no guest speaker this week. Gareth's away. But don't forget, the Yorkshire Photographic Union exhibition is still on at Barnsley Civic until next Saturday, the 22nd of June. So catch it while you can. We went to an exhibition at the Portland Works of the Sheffield Photographic Society earlier this week, and it was brilliant, but that's finished now, so you've lost your chance to go and see that. Next week, we've got Chris Dale as our guest speaker. He's going to be talking about rising cancer rates relating to health and diet. All interesting stuff. Later in the show, we'll be talking to our PG, but before that, we've got loads to tell you, Paul.
Right, at the RSPB Old Moor on Sunday 30th June and Sunday 11th of August between 11 o'clock and 3 o'clock. It's the MSAS Solar Sunday, which is the Mexborough and Swinton Astronomical Society. It's free, but reserve charges still apply. MSAS will have telescope equipment that allows you to view the sun safely. A great opportunity to hear from experts about how the sun is not just a terrestrial body that warms the planet, but it also supports all life on Earth. The sun is the nuclear energy of our solar system, and you may even see evidence of solar flares, which are huge magnetic bursts of energy shooting into space.
All good stuff. These events do get rather busy, so go and check it out if you can, and it's all good stuff. They do some great work, and that's one of their public outreach events. Mm. Fantastic. Next up, we're going to talk about a skin cancer vaccine trial. So a cancer vaccine being trialled in the UK has been found to half the risk of dying from melanoma, providing the clearest evidence yet that this new class of treatment can can transform survival rates. So melanoma is a type of skin cancer that can spread around the body. It affects 16,700 people each year in the UK, killing 2,300 of those. So the new vaccine is customised using a sample of tumour taken from each patient, which is used to train the immune system to recognise and hunt down any cancer cells.
And over a three-year period, the vaccine was found to cut the risk of death or of the cancer returning by 49%. The findings, which are presented at the American Society of Clinical Oncology conference in Chicago, were heralded as extremely impressive. Professor Charles Swanton, Chief Clinician of Cancer Research UK, said the new vaccine approach is another piece of a puzzle that will allow more patients to be cured, hopefully or fewer patients to suffer disease relapse. Ultimately, it will contribute to survival rates improving continually over the next decades and more.
So multiple studies are being presented at the same American Society of Clinical Oncology conference in Chicago that promise trials for vaccine against breast, bowel, skin and lung cancer, with scientists hopeful that the technology will provide a new weapon against disease. It's interesting that Chris Dale's going to be talking to us next week about rising cancer rates, and it is quite stark, particularly for the under 50s.
Yes.
Yeah, and while the melanoma skin cancer vaccine is designed to prevent the disease from returning to patients who have had a tumour removed, there are also trials to see if vaccines could prevent people from getting the disease in the first place. This includes one called LungVax at University College London Hospital for those at high risk of lung cancer.
Many people tell you that they're your friend. Leave them, you need them. Watch round the river bend. Make sure that you're receiving the signals they send. Cause brother, you've only got two hands to lend. Maybe there's someone who makes you move. Some nights you loom up ahead when you're asleep. Some days there's things on your mind you should keep. Sometimes it's tougher to look than to leave. You better watch out for the skin deep.
Only 40 years old, that track. That's frightening, isn't it? Skin Deep by the Stranglers. We played that because we were talking about skin cancer vaccine trial. You're, of course, listening to the Life Science Radio Show here on Sheffield Live 93.2 FM. Got some great stuff coming up. This week's Environment Update first.
Oh, it's me.
It's
yes.
You.
I know. It is only
we're
joke.
Working him hard.
Yeah. Yeah. The Bonn Climate Change Conference is underway in Germany. Delegates from 198 countries are using the summit to prepare for COP29 later this year. What does COP
Conference of the Parties.
Yes. Even Ogo didn't get that.
He didn't.
Right. He got it wrong.
I did. It's a quiz question. It foxed a lot of people.
Yes. One key area of discussion is climate finance. After delegates at COP28 agreed to establish a loss and damage fund to support climate vulnerable countries, new taxes on defence, technology and fashion companies are up for discussion, as these could potentially raise billions for the fund.
Very interesting. Next up is Renewable Requiem. This is an interesting one. Officials in Valencia are planning to create the largest urban solar farm in Spain by using the city's cemeteries. The roofs of mausoleums across multiple sites will be covered with nearly 7,000 solar panels, with the energy used to power municipal buildings and 1,000 vulnerable households.
And a bit closer to home, Glastonbury turning cowpats into graphene, which is G-R-A-P-H-E-N-E. Worthy Farm, the site of the Glastonbury Festival, is using British technology to turn cow manure into wonder material, graphene. The farm hopes to produce about 4 tonnes a year, enough to make 3,000 hard-wearing tyres.
Oh, very interesting.
I never knew that. Be careful where you spread them when
yeah,
you get to Glastonbury.
I know. Next one, delightful dormice. 10 rare hazel dormice have been released into a woodland in Bedfordshire to help boost the county's only native population. The species has declined by 70% in England since 2000, with inappropriate woodland management damaging their habitat and climate change disrupting their natural behaviour patterns.
Next, new scheme aims to boost electricals recycling. A new scheme has been launched to increase the recycling of electrical items and batteries. The Bring Bank project will see collection points opened in 10 council buildings across North Lincolnshire. Items like toasters and kettles can also be left in curbside recycling boxes or taken to a tip. The initiative is being supported by not-for-profit organisation Material Focus. The organisation said 39% of people bin electrical items rather than recycling or reusing them, leading to more than 100,000 tonnes of electricals being thrown away every year. Electrical items can contain 75% of materials that can be recycled, including gold, silver and copper.
Indeed, all good stuff. And finally, Coldplay's carbon. Coldplay announced that they have reduced the carbon footprint of their touring by 59% compared with their previous world tour. The band first pledged to reduce emissions in 2019, with frontman Chris Martin saying he wanted future tours to have a positive impact.
Take it. Sometimes I just can't take it, and it isn't alright. I'm not gonna make it. And I think my shoes untied. I'm like a broken record. I'm like a broken record, and I'm not playing right. Just so you go out by, kill me. Till you tell me on the heavenly phone. So hold tight. Come on. I got my hands up shaking just to let you know that you've got a higher power. Got me singing every second, dancing every hour. Oh yeah, you've got a higher power, and she really someone I wanna know. Electric. This boy is electric, and you're sparkling like the universe connected. And I'm buzzing night after night after night. This joy is electric. This joy is electric, and you're circuiting through. I'm so happy that I'm alive. Happy I'm alive at the same time as you. Cause you've got a higher power. Got me singing every second, dancing every hour. Oh yeah, you've got a higher power, and you really someone I wanna know.
Bit of Coldplay there. because the final bit of our environment update was about them reducing their carbon footprint of touring by 59%. All good stuff. Just tuned in, you're listening to the Live Science Radio Show here on Sheffield Live, 93.2 FM on digital if you're in South Yorkshire or sheffieldlive.org. Talking about science in all its different forms. Now, this next story I've been meaning to talk about for quite a while. It's about a book that was written by Dr. Liam Fox. It was published on the 7th of May. You can get it roughly priced £20. I'm thinking of buying it myself. The title of the book is Why the Coming Storm, Why Water Will Write the 21st Century. And as in write, it means to write a book, if you like. One of the headlines of the article was plastic is likely to outweigh all the fish in the sea by 2050, which is quite a shocking thing to think about. Wow. So access, I read this article and I just thought, wow, it's one of the most interesting things I've read in quite a while. So access to clean water is the most basic human right of all. That means the competition for water with a burgeoning human population is a threat to our wider security. And our present levels of global pollution are a collective crime against nature and a betrayal of our duty to conserve our natural environment for the generations to come afterwards. But today, dreadful though they are, we must keep the problems of Britain's water pollution in perspective. So says Dr. Liam Fox. This is him writing about his book. The Danube, the River Danube, for example, he says, has high levels of chemical pollution, particularly pharmaceutical waste and farming pesticides, and there has been increasing scrutiny of the role Serbia plays in the pollution of Europe's second longest river. So about a third of Belgrade, Serbia's capital city of 1.6 million people, has no connection to drainage systems and relies instead on septic tanks that are emptied straight into the river. Well, I certainly didn't know that before I read this. The rest of the population spew their unprocessed waste into the waterway through about 100 sewage drains. And in all, this is over 13,000 times the unacceptable volume of wastewater dumped into the Thames last year. So there's some big numbers there. That's one example, is part of a wider horror story about how the human population is trashing global waters. And perhaps the most shameful fact is that 80% of the sewage produced globally makes its way into the world's oceans completely untreated. So that's 80% is completely untreated. This can be deadly for delicate marine habitats like seagrass beds and coral reefs. And when healthy, these habitats act as carbon sinks, produce oxygen and allow the marine flora and fauna to develop and thrive. So in 2021, a global study by geographers at Columbia University measured and mapped nitrogen and faecal indicator organisms from human sewage in watersheds around the world, which are areas of land that channel rainfall, snowmelt and runoff into a river. The researchers found that just 25 watersheds out of 135,000 in total contributed nearly half of all wastewater nitrogen, but that 58% of coral reefs and 88% of seagrass beds were exposed to it. So along with the Danube, the watersheds that carry the most pollution to the ocean include the Yangtze, the Nile, the Mississippi, and the Parana in South America, which ultimately empties into the Atlantic. And that sort of indicates the global nature of the problem. And the author, Dr. Liam Fox, is saying this is all before we come to one of our greatest horrors, the scourge of plastics. At the present rate of accumulation, plastic is expected to outweigh all the fish in the sea by 2050. In the first decade of the 21st century, we made more plastic than had been made in the whole of history up to that point. And there are now somewhere between 15 and 50 trillion, that's trillion pieces, in the world's oceans. There is nowhere on the planet that is plastic-free, even the Antarctic. So four countries, China, Indonesia, Thailand and Vietnam, dump more plastic into the sea than all other countries combined. And of those, China is by far the worst culprit. So our precious marine life is usually threatened by plastic. Seabirds and turtles have been found with bottle tops in their stomachs and countless numbers have died from respiratory obstruction or plastic ingestion. And the author says, Dr. Liam Fox says, yet only two of the United Nations 17 goals for sustainable development mention water at all. So goal 14 for the United Nations is to conserve and sustainably use the oceans, seas and marine resources for sustainable development. And targets for 2025 will be missed by a considerable distance. So goal 6 is by 2030 achieve universal and equitable access to safe and affordable drinking water for all. This prerequisite for health and human well-being as well as economic and social development comes bizarrely in the author's view behind other goals such as education and gender equality. So those of us who are fortunate enough, despite the recent lapses by UK water companies, should seek to ensure that everyone is able to benefit from the advantages we take for granted. Pushing the case for clean water and worldwide agreements on the pollution of our oceans is a crusade that must be put above the pettiness of domestic politics. It is time to lift up the level of our national discourse, shift our timeframes and recognise the irreversible nature of the damage we as a species are inflicting on our precious blue world. And that is from the book by Dr. Liam Fox, The Coming Storm, Why Water Will Write the 21st Century. It was published on the 7th of May.
Looking for water. looking, looking, I'm looking for water. Looking for water, looking, looking, I'm looking for water. Looking for water.
The amazing David Bowie there with a track called Looking for Water. And we played that because we're talking about the book that was written by Dr. Liam Fox, The Coming Storm, Why Water Will Write the 21st Century. Very interesting stuff. You, of course, listen to the Life Science Radio Show here on Sheffield Live 93.2 FM. Finally, before we talk to our PG, we're going to talk about Hops to It. A pint-sized guide to beer. I found this in the Tesco Free magazine. I thought, wow, this is interesting stuff. Mm. So what is beer? Well, it's a fermented drink made from malted grains, usually barley, and added to that water, hops and yeast. And in a nutshell, the grains are heated with water to break them down and create a sweet liquid known as wort, W-O-R-T. Then in go the hops. And what are hops, you might ask?
Hops are little green flowers added to the wort that influence a beer's flavour by creating bitterness, aroma and flavour. They also help to keep the beer bubbly, resulting in the classic foamy head.
There you go.
And they don't like it down south, do they, the foamy head?
Do they not?
They knock it off. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
So anyway, after boiling... So after the hops go in, after boiling, yeast is added and fermentation begins, turning the sugar into carbon dioxide and, of course, alcohol. So what makes it a lager? Interesting. In a lager, the yeast settles at the bottom of the wort and works at cooler temperatures, which means fermentation takes longer. So lagers are usually lighter than ales. And styles include pilsners and hells, whatever they are. Mm. And what makes it an ale? So in an ale, the yeast settles at the top and works at a higher temperature. This creates a stronger, more complex flavour than in lager, and usually a higher alcohol content too. The broad spectrum of ales include pale ales, IPAs, stouts and Belgian beers. So basically, what are all the different ones? So IPA. So pale ales didn't travel well. So in the 1800s, the India Pale Ale was invented, which is what it stands for. Made with more hops, it stood up to longer journeys. And with its punchy, bitter flavour and slightly higher alcohol content, IPA or India Pale Ale is still popular to this day. So what's pale ale then? That's also known as bitter. Pale ales are made with paler roasted malts. They are heavy on the hops, which leads to a juicy and citrusy taste. Next one, lager. With light colour, crispness and bubbly carbonation, the mellow taste of a lager is generally a good place to start if you've never drunk beer. And we're not saying you should drink beer. Don't drink too much of it. But what with the football being on, I suspect a lot's being bought.
Hey, you'll have to pop it at Norfolk Arms
on the way home, yeah. So anyway, Pilsner. So what makes it a Pilsner? That comes from the Czech Republic. This is a paler lager with more hops, leading to a floral, earthy flavour. Finally, stout. What makes it stout then? Ooh. A velvety ale where some of the grains are being roasted at the beginning. Are roasted at the beginning to create bitterness and the classic dark hue or colour. Stouts can have notes of coffee, chocolate and oak, and the oak comes from the barrel it's brewed in, while some brewers add flavourings like licorice or vanilla. Mm. And finally, did you know, if you're after a pint with even more complex flavours, look out for craft beers, which are often produced in smaller batches. And I think Sheffield's got the biggest number of small brewers anywhere in the UK, I think. There you go.
You see where we belong.
In Excess, Taste It, what a great track. Talked about that, to talk about beers, yes. How they're made and what sets them, the different beers apart from each other. Oh, fascinating stuff, I like to think. So think about that if you're watching the football and having a beer or two. If you've just tuned in, you are, of course, listening to the Life Science Radio Show here on Sheffield Live, 93.2 FM on digital if you're in South Yorkshire, or sheffieldlive.org. We should have our PG
five,
on the line.
Four...
Good morning, Paul.
Good morning.
Now, have you had your first? Have you had your first pint yet? No.
No, I'm waiting for that.
Oh yeah, brilliant.
Yeah, coffee so far.
Excellent. So, what's caught your eye in the science news this week, then, Paul?
Well, I thought maybe get our teeth into something that has come from the University of Sheffield. They've done a new bit of research into the hidden challenges of tooth loss and dentures.
Ooh.
And they're saying that they've identified in the new research that the studies reveal the hidden emotional challenges that patients go through following tooth loss, and how patients in the study highlighted feelings of self-consciousness, shame or fear, as well as physical sensations like pain and sensitivity, and worries about how the tooth loss might impact their life. About 10 to 15% of the population wear removable dentures,
wow,
which can be significantly impact daily life and social interactions, leading to a hidden disability, they say, for some wearers. Other restoration treatments, such as bridges or implants, are often unobtainable for most people due to the high cost,
yeah,
and the availability of NHS dentists. So that's sort of playing into some of the issues that are around. And it also describes a new way of understanding how patients experience getting dentures, from losing their teeth to feeling comfortable with them, this approach could help dentists develop better treatment plans and aftercare for patients who need dentures. So it's one of those things. I think we've become a bit more obsessed with Hollywood smiles these days. I think if you look at sort of dental products, so many now purport to heal, fix, repair, improve, whiten, cosmetic sort of things for your teeth. And there's a whole massive range out there. I know from sort of past with parents, my dad used to wear dentures, and that in those days there were problems about how you kept them in place.
Yes.
So you used to get this sort of squeezy goo that you put inside dentures to keep them fixed in your mouth.
I think it was called, was it Polygrip or something?
Yeah.
I can't remember. It was like a tube of toothpaste, but it was like cement were
it. It was, yeah. We've improved things, so people are now living longer. And the social value placed on your smile has led to a lot of people keeping their teeth longer. But it's also led to an increasing number of people wanting some kind of restoration work, like crowns, bridges and implants. And I can vouch for that because I've got a few of those varieties.
Don't we know?
Many of those treatments remain unobtainable, again, due for the availability of a dentist or the high cost of private dental work.
Yeah.
So removable dentures are often the only viable option for people experiencing major tooth loss, with an estimated 10 to 15% of the population, as I say, wearing dentures. So.
Does the research say what the cause of the tooth loss is? Is it genetic? Well, is it, you know?
No, I think it's a range of things. I mean, basically, yes, with age, quite often your gums will shrink, and that can allow things to get closer to the roots of your teeth and can cause issues. A lot of it is our dental hygiene.
Yeah.
You know, when you're eating things, you can brush your teeth, but you don't often get to the gaps in your teeth, so you start to look at the sort of floss that you can put in between your teeth. Little brushes and things, and I know I'm waiting a couple of weeks' time to go for a training and clean-up session on looking after my teeth, because I've always been the best.
Oh, Paul, you naughty boy.
Well, I think it sort of goes back in time, and I think it's one of the issues, because when I was just sort of getting towards the end of junior school, we used to have to go and see a dentist who came into the school on a visit basis. And it was quite often there were people who'd perhaps been employed in the armed forces dealing with teeth. And they weren't always the best people to give you your first experience of having something sorted out. So I think I had a tooth removed and I had gas, and I remember waking up to somebody trying to rouse me by giving me a slap round the face.
Oh, great.
kind of why eventually sort of was less than enthusiastic about going to the dentist.
I think a lot of people don't like the dentist. And our neighbour, Mavis, she's 91 or nearly 91, and she cracked a tooth, a front tooth, when she was about 12, funnily enough.
Yep.
And she's had that crack all her life and it's never bothered her. And then it just fell, half a tooth fell off her front tooth. And she went to the dentist dreading it. And she came back and they just I think they just glued it, put some composite on, and it looks amazing. And she didn't feel a thing. It was no problem at all.
Yeah. Well, I think it's that's the thing. It's one of the problems I have with mine, that basically the quadrants of your tooth, you can get fracture lines on. And that's caused me to have a few sort of crowns and things. But what the study found out is that basically the the four stages, you get tooth loss, and that's the first bit where you experience the physical loss of teeth. And then you get into the emotional tunnel, the stage focusing on the roller coaster of tooth loss and the experience of your self-consciousness, possible depression, and struggling with dentures and coping with them. And they might get to feel shame, anger, or fear, but also some hope that things are improving. There's also the hope that they can get some kind of prosthetic. So now you can get a bridge that clips onto your teeth. You can also get things with basically a screw that goes into your jaw. And then you get a false tooth that sits on top of it. And they kind of can be in that hope stage, anticipating getting a smile back and the ability to eat normally. Because that's one of the other things, is obviously it's one of the things we do on a regular basis, is we use our teeth when we're eating. But finally, they say there's a prosthetic compromise leading to managing disclosure, and that's the final stage, saying that dentures take some getting used to, and patients might need to adjust their expectations or learn how to manage talking and eating with dentures. And I say some of the old things were trying to find ways to fix them in your mouth and keep them where they should be. So they're also developing strategies to feel comfortable disclosing that they use dentures, because it's the kind of thing where, you know, you don't want to have a cough and find your dentures in your dinner plate or something. They sort of identified wear and removal dentures can be like a hidden disability for many. People with dentures feel they have to hide them due to feeling embarrassed or worrying that they'll fall out. And they're trying to avoid some social situations. So I know there's advertising running now, you know, can you spot which one of this
has got
dentures and that side of things. But Barry Gibson, who's a lead researcher, is a professor in medical sociology at the University of Sheffield, said, "Tooth loss can be hugely traumatic, and this study's uncovered just how challenging it is for people needing partial dentures. Feelings such as embarrassment and shame can significantly affect the process of dentures being made and fitted, and on top of it, if they don't fit properly, this can make everyday activities such as speaking, eating and drinking very difficult." And you can do that sometimes. You can hear some people, when they've got a full set of dentures in, start to develop a bit of a whistle.
Yes.
So you can sort of see things. And it's one of those things where I think they're trying to get people to face up to what they're dealing with, be a bit more hopeful, and identify patients who may need additional support. And I know they've trialled a few things. They trialled at my dentist having more regular to have cleaning and inspection of your teeth rather than actually having some dental work done. And I think it's one of those important things. And it seems that, I say, because of the way people now are sort of wanting to have a Hollywood smile, because it sets them on a track and opens doors, potentially. There's a lot more going into people getting into that. But also, you know, the horror stories we've heard, because of dentistry being in such a mess at the moment, of people sort of using pliers to extract their own teeth and looking at lots of remedies to try and do it. And I know in lockdown I had problems with a broken tooth, and you can buy these so-called repair kits that supposedly help, but oh, what a nightmare they are to use. You try and put some kind of filler into a broken tooth to protect it until you can get in to see the dentist, but quite often you put it in and it falls straight out again. It's not a lot of the time now in the dentist, when they're using something like that, they'll have something that's set by UV light. So you get them, they pop a probe in your mouth, which has got an ultraviolet light source in it, and that hardens the stuff in your mouth. But it's also why you tend to use air. Well, they blow air in your mouth to dry your teeth if they're working on to make glues and whatever.
Yeah, to make it, yeah.
Stick effectively. So, interesting bit of research, I thought, for University of Sheffield. And it's an area where, as I say, we talk about it a lot, but usually on behalf of somebody else.
Yeah, but it's interesting because obviously Sheffield's got Charles Clifford. Dental hospital, and that's like a teaching hospital, isn't it? So I just wondered if the research was done in conjunction with them.
No, I think it was the university, but quite often, yes, there are links there that they don't declare, or people work in places like Charles Clifford to maintain their skill sets. So,
yes.
There could well be a link, but I think we've still got the issues of... I don't think Sheffield's bad overall in terms of access to dentistry, but
some areas are,
some
aren't they?
Have those issues.
But a lot of it was really when COVID came along, you know, people weren't seeing the dentist for 1 or 2 years, you know.
Well, I think that highlighted it, but I think it progressively was getting there just because of the way the whole thing's organised and funded. So it is yet another thing that's cropping up where basically the agreement that they made with dentists fixed prices, tried to maintain availability, so they gave them a bigger roster and paid them less overall for doing a lot of the dentistry that needed to be doing. And I think that... some people move away to private dentistry, and if they do that, they tend to pay more money, which attracts some of the people out of the NHS
yes.
into private work. So
yeah.
It's that whole sort of balance of having, I think, a more holistic approach, because the terrifying thing is that if you do get sort of infections and problems with your teeth, it can affect your whole well-being.
Indeed.
It's not a tiny localised thing, and certainly a lot of people, as they get older, say this problem with naturally your gums starting to recede and expose a bit more of your tooth can lead to infections. Infections can cause all sorts of issues. So
yeah.
It's one of those things that you tend to moan about if you've got a minor thing. And as I say, you can be quite shy about having dentures.
It's an important part of who you are, isn't it? Your teeth, you know, when you talk, you smile, you know, you eat and everything.
Yeah.
But it's an interesting one, Paul. What I was going to say is, you know, a lot of people, you know, think going to the dentist, you know, an NHS dentist is expensive, but, you know... Yeah. If you don't go every 6 months and you miss appointments, they'll take you off the books.
Oh, no,
and then when you are in trouble, you're having to go private. And it is. I'm private now. I go private now. But it is incredibly expensive.
Eye-watering. Yeah.
It is eye-watering. And for some people, it's way, way out of their range. And it's an interesting thing as well, Paul. There's been a lot in the press recently about sugar. Sugary drinks that are bad for you for lots of reasons, because it's all about your gut health, cancers and things like that. But it's also, it affects your teeth.
There's also a lot about sugar in our diets generally. You know, there's a lot of sugar content in the ultra-processed foods. So you kind of building up an issue. I remember, I think... A year ago, just over a year ago, we reported on a pilot study they were doing at the university to teach young children how to correctly clean and look after their teeth. So they were issuing a guidance package and some sort of basic tooth cleaning, toothpaste and things, supplies to schools, just to try and teach young children how to clean their teeth. And I think, yeah, there are some advances, but again, you can buy a very expensive electric toothbrush with a light on and a sound effect that kind of teaches you how much pressure to apply to your teeth, how long to brush them, keep them going. But you've got to learn how to do it properly. Or you waste a lot of money on buying something.
Yeah, and it's particularly hard to clean behind your back teeth. And that's where it's your big teeth, your top back teeth and your bottom back teeth. That's where a lot of the...
they're your molars that grind and chew your food.
But they're the biggest ones, and they're the ones that are more likely to suffer, really. But going back to the sugar in the diet, it's not only affecting people's teeth. It's, you know, bringing diabetes and, you know, all sorts of other issues, isn't it? But my top tips, Paul, because I've been through all this as well. what I do, and I'm into a good routine now, when I brush my teeth, I've got an electric toothbrush, but they are quite expensive and the replacement heads are quite expensive. I look at the clock when I start brushing my teeth. We've got a digital clock in the bathroom. It hasn't got any seconds, but I look at whatever minute it's on, and I brush my teeth until for 3 minutes past that time. So that means I'm brushing, depending on which point in the minute I start, I'm brushing my teeth for at least 2 minutes, and it does make a big difference. I think most people, you'll find that you're not brushing your teeth for long enough.
That's absolutely right. I say, and the problem is, I think that over generations, they haven't been passing on that kind of information. I think the further back you go, the more likely it is that they weren't taught themselves how to look after teeth. And, I mean, it's 32 you get, I think, isn't it, teeth? So you need to take care of them. Another thing that you need to take care of is what you eat. So sort of big news that's been out is there's an outbreak of E. coli disease.
Oh, I saw that. I wondered if you would cover it, Paul. In sandwiches? Good grief.
Yeah, I mean, at the moment, food manufacturers have been recalling prepackaged sandwiches, wraps and salads that go out through all the major supermarket chains. And that's because there's a possible contamination with E. coli. So there's still... saying that E. coli bacteria has not been detected in the products, but they've been recalled as a precaution. But across the UK, 211 people plus are known to have been affected by a new strain of E. coli, and that's currently up from 113 just a week ago. So,
is it localised to any particular area?
No, it's fairly, that's the problem. At least 67 have been admitted to hospital out of those, so it's a high sort of impact. And they said that this is the actual E. coli is quite benevolent and has got an amazing other life, but this kind of E. coli, it can create a situation where it produces a toxin. So this is the issue. The toxin that it produces can lead to bloody diarrhea and infection. So E. coli STEC bacteria. And it said that this is just, again, an alarm call to processing, because you can buy bags of salad from supermarkets, say, pre-washed, and a lot of people just open it and eat it.
Yes.
So it's a kind of bell ring to say, well, you know, fruit and vegetables and everything else you can wash. And I mean, if you want an indicator, if you get apples and you try to wash them, you suddenly find out that, yeah, they have got a wax put onto the apples to make them appear better. You can see that. And you can see now that you can get unwaxed lemons for your culinary work. Very, very difficult, but this E. coli can sometimes contaminate the water or the soil that's used to grow lettuce and vegetables. So it's not necessarily the treatment it's had, it's come out of the ground. And this toxin's called Shiga, S-H-I-G-A, and that can attack the lining of your gut. It's particularly difficult at both ends of the age scale. So young people can be highly affected, old people can be highly affected, anybody with autoimmune deficiency can be affected by it. So it's E. coli, it's been around for a long time. The key thing is, if you start to get diarrhea, is to drink plenty of fluids. And again, one of the things that they say is for very young children and for older people, it's a bit more difficult to get them to hydrate effectively, because there's not really any kind of treatment for it other than maintaining your hydration. So you've got to be wary that it can develop into a problem where you damage your kidneys. So regularly wash your hands with warm water and soap. Hey, we're back to that.
We all back sounds like COVID, Paul.
Alcohol gels do not kill all the bugs that can cause diarrheal illness. So wash your fruit and vegetables and cook the food at the temperature suggested. And if you have symptoms, you shouldn't prepare food for other people. You should avoid visiting people in hospitals or care homes. And you shouldn't return to work, school or nursery until 48 hours after you've stopped having symptoms.
But how do you know it's E. coli and not something else?
Well, normally that's the problem why they've had a difficulty tracking this down, because its symptoms usually occur within sort of 3 or 4 days of being affected by it. It can take up to 10 days, but then what public health people have been doing is visiting the people, like the 60-odd people in hospital, and saying, can you remember what you had to eat days ago?
Probably not.
Yeah. So that's one of the issues, is being able to trace the source. It's a bit, again, I mean, if you look at COVID, it's very similar. You know, there was a reporting facility. Well, now it's back to the sort of health people to be able to recognise an issue and put into action a plan to try and track its source down. So they've indicated a possible source. They've got action by the supermarkets to take some of the products away.
Yeah, to take it off the shelves.
Yeah, but as I say, it is a very, very common in a lot of things, E. coli, and it's common within us.
Yeah. And on that note, Paul, I'm afraid I'm going to have to let you go, because we've got the film show in the room, in the house even.
Well, I was going to say, I'm going to have a quick salad sandwich.
Go and have a salad sandwich in the pint now and go watch some football. Great stuff, Paul. We'll speak to you Monday. Glory Days Rock Show. Bye-bye.
Okay.
Bye, Paul. Bye.
Bye. Bye.